Indie Media is DIY news. It is about people reporting their own news directly without the need for reporters, bypassing the corporate media.
There are 100 Indie Media or IMC websites worldwide providing grassroots reports of struggles, campaigns and protests.
There are so many people here who are saying no to the government today, and this is democracy in action.
Everybody's here. Everybody in the country seems to be here. They're just coming from all over the place. The banners are showing all the tiny, tiny little pockets of the country. Everybody has come down here.
The project started 3 years ago, covering the massive Seattle protests, which shut down the World Trade Organization summit.
Uncensored and unsponsored, IMC sites can be updated anywhere, anytime, by anyone.
The open to all nature of these sites means that you can publish your own reports about your own issues and at the same time connect to a global network of grassroots news.
What you are about to hear,
What you are about to hear are some highlights from these global websites and from our very own UK IMC Wire. For more information or to get the news direct from the streets, check out www.indiemedia.org.uk.
The world is waking outside my window. Bella ciao, bella ciao, bella ciao, ciao, ciao. Drags my senses into the sunlight, for there are things that I must do.
Hi and welcome to the show. It's Wednesday the 7th of April and you're listening to the Indie Media Radio London Newswire show. This week we'll be bringing you the latest May Day mayhem press propaganda and a few April Fool's stories as well. And the usual journey through the Indie Media Newswires from the UK and beyond, as well as a timely piece about a new land occupation about to stand almost on the anniversary over 350 years ago of the diggers' occupation.
In 1649, to St. George's Hill, a ragged band they called the Diggers came to show the people's will. They defied the landlords, they defied the laws. They were the dispossessed, reclaiming what was theirs. We come in peace, they said, to dig and sow. We come to work the lands in common and to make the waste ground grow. This earth divided, we will make whole. So it will be a common treasury for all. The sin of property we do disdain. No one has any right to buy and sell the earth for private gain by theft and murder. They took the land. Now everywhere the walls spring up at their command.
They make the laws
to chain us well. The clergy dazzle us with heaven, or they damn us into hell. We will not worship the God they serve, the God of greed to feed the rich while poor folk starve. We work, we eat together. We need no swords. We will not bow to the masters or pay rent to the lords till we are free. Though we are poor, you diggers all stand up for glory. Stand up now.
From tomorrow and over Easter, people from around the country will be converging on the Pembrokeshire National Park in one of the most proactive bits of direct action for years. This time, activists will not be trying to stop something. They'll be fighting for their dreams of a countryside teeming with life. Not just plant and animal life, but human life too. With enough land for everyone, not just the rich few. Historically, people have been squeezed out of the countryside to work for factory owners in towns and cities. As a result, most of us have lost the fundamental knowledge of life, how to grow food and how to live lightly upon the land. The Land Is Ours campaign and Chapter 7 are organising a land occupation and a low-impact dwelling convention in Pembrokeshire National Park. Now, while it centres around Tony Wrench's sustainably built roundhouse, which has been ordered to be demolished, the occupation aims to be proactive, demonstrating sustainable skills and the kind of development environmentalists are pressing for. Tony Wrench built his roundhouse at a farm community where he and his partner live and work. They built it in 1997. They constructed it out of Douglas fir poles, logs and the earth from the farm, and recycled elements such as windows and tyres. It's highly insulated by the earth and renewably powered and heated with wood and solar energy. The cost was minimal since many of the materials were free, and it was a self-build project. The landscape impact, while the site is a national park, is minimal since the turf roof and cordwood walls, that's walls made out of stacked logs, are from the surrounding land. And the building indeed was not discovered by the planners for over 2 years, and only then, when a survey plane passing overhead noticed the reflection of the sun on a solar panel. The dwelling has twice been refused planning permission by the local authority and lost a planning appeal in 2002. The local authority has now imposed an enforcement notice ordering its demolition. In a shocking case of double standards, the roundhouse has been ordered to be demolished. At the same time, a consortium headed by Alfred McAlpine has recently been given outline permission for the Bluestones Holiday Centre, which will comprise of 340 log cabins imported from Estonia, 60 holiday flats, a snow dome, a water world and a sports centre. The Campaign for the Protection of Rural Wales describes the Bluestone Park as a new settlement of up to 2,000 residents and 5,000 day visitors. It will be the third largest settlement in the park, with all the infrastructure, traffic and waste of a small town.
A representative from Chapter 7 said, "It is hard to imagine a more blatant display of double standards. Wrench's house may conflict with certain planning policies, but Bluestones defies many more. Planning Policy Wales decrees that large development should not take place in a national park unless there is an overriding public need, and the development could not be sited elsewhere. Wrench has built his home out of local materials. He coppices his woodlands, milks goats, makes cheese, turns wooden bowls, and lives on a farm that provides tourist accommodation. He appears to be doing what inhabitants of national parks are supposed to. It's hard to see how Bluestone's climate-controlled Disneyland does anything to conserve landscape and heritage or promote its enjoyment. The inconsistency in these decisions derives not from Chief Planning Officer Catherine Milner, who recommended against both developments, but from the Planning Committee, which refused the roundhouse, but gave permission for Bluestones. This was not surprising, since seven of the committee are also on Pembrokeshire County Council, which has funded Bluestones with a loan of £1 million. The councillors ignored a warning from the National Parks Monitoring Officer that their vote on the matter would contravene legislation on conflict of interest. The councillors argue that the region needs jobs, but this carries less weight than it might have done some years ago. Unemployment has halved in Pembrokeshire since 1996, and at 3.75% is only slightly above the national average, which itself is lower than it has been for more than 20 years. A report by 9 small holiday businesses in the area states that there is a shortage of suitable staff. For many people in the national park, housing is a more pressing concern than jobs. In Newport, a mile from Wrench's roundhouse, young local people priced out of the housing market by tourists have formed a cooperative called Green Roofs to try to persuade the council to release land outside the village for a self-build scheme. A seasonal job washing up at Bluestones is not going to pay their mortgage. The 340 chalets and the 80 traditional dwellings would serve the people of Pembrokeshire better if they were scattered discreetly around villages to provide affordable housing.
Events during the occupation over the weekend will include the construction of another turf roof roundhouse in the national park, the first ideal low impact home exhibition, a march with local people to the gates of the community where the roundhouse is due to be demolished. Also, local people are going to be protesting at the planning offices, and indeed other actions that will expose and ridicule the Bluestones Park plan. Now, Chapter 7, one of the organisations behind the protest, provides free planning advice to people like Tony Wrench. They deal with about 500 inquiries each year. Some of these people have low-impact homes like Tony's. Others live in shacks or caravans. The majority live in the countryside because they carry out agriculture, forestry and conservation work or some other activity on the land, usually on their own small holding. But Chapter 7 estimate that at least 10,000 people in England and Wales, not counting travellers and gypsies, are living in low-impact homes without planning permission and are at risk of being similarly evicted from their homes. The Land is Ours campaign sages are drawing attention to the Bluestones development because it highlights the double standards of the planning authorities. They say the Bluestones decision is also symptomatic of double standards within the entire planning system nationally. Planning permission is regularly given for corporate schemes involving large numbers of holiday cabins, often in designated conservation areas. But when a local person wants to live in an affordable wooden cabin or on their own land, they are almost invariably refused permission. For example, in 1995, within the space of 2 months, Deputy Judge Nigel McLeod QC allowed an appeal for 48 holiday chalets on Greenbelt land in the New Forest, yet refused an appeal for a few local impact dwellings on undesignated land at Tinker's Bubble, an agricultural community in Somerset. For more information on the occupation, which starts tomorrow and runs over the weekend, and for all of these issues, check out the Land is Ours website, and that's www.tlio.org.uk.
Come on in then, just bring the fiddle on.
That track was called Blarney Cat.
Hunt the Blarney Cat.
Hunt the Blarney Cat. It says Blarney Cat here. Several spoof stories appeared across the Indie Media Network on April Fool's Day. Here the story was, May Day cancelled, Tony Blair's government has decided to ban the 1st of May. The text ran as follows. In a surprise announcement, Tony Blair's government has decided to ban the 1st of May. April will have 31 days, as opposed to the usual 30, and May will formally start on the 2nd. During the hurriedly convened press conference last night, the Prime Minister said, due to recent protests, demonstrations and marches disrupting the centre of London and the city on May the 1st by anti-globalisation activists and unions, we have decided to do away with the day, and hopefully it will be just like any other working day. The Home Office will be sending out instructions to all businesses to adjust their calendars accordingly and has banned all marches to do with May Day, as there won't be one. The unions who were hit hard by this have yet to respond, but a government spokesperson said, I'm sure they will understand the reasons for this measure. George Bush has fully backed the proposal, saying he would take up the idea and run away with it. This was, of course, an April Fool. Other stories from the Indie Media Network included Bush and Cheney resign. Washington. Last night's surprise announcement from the White House that both George W. Bush and Richard Cheney are stepping down from office sent Washington wags into a tailspin of confusion and controversy. Both Republican leaders have been under fire recently for mishandling the so-called war on terrorism and their actions with regard to the 9/11 tragedy. Another story, taking over Monsanto from Biotech IMC under the slogan, don't hate the corporations, buy them. A global a global coalition of anti-GE activists has decided on a new strategy in campaigning against genetic engineering and is preparing for a hostile takeover of Monsanto, the world's biggest producer of GE crops. Corsica becomes EU deportation centre. Last week in Brussels, the EU foreign ministry pushed repression against migrants and other foreigners further in their effort to build Fort Europe in effort to control migrants. It was decided to use the island Corsica in the Mediterranean Sea as a central deportation centre by 2005. Indie media team in merger talks with CBS and Viacom. George Soros, chairman of IndieMedia.org Limited, has begun merger talks with the CBS Viacom News Network to help bring together the vibrant staff of the independent news network with the resources and global consumer reach of CBS News Network. This follows a meeting of the IMC board of directors and key Indie Media shareholders, where it was decided that Indie Media needed to branch out from its traditional liberal readership demographic to encompass more mainstream news interests and readerships. Funnily enough, The Economist also ran an April Fool's story about May Day, asking whether anti-globalisation protesters might outsource their protests. Ha ha ha. Though not as daft as The Times, which reported the release of details from the National Archives about British plans to use a chicken-powered nuclear bomb during the Cold War, or The Sun that said that Thames Valley police are fitting hawks with miniature cameras in an effort to catch speeding drivers.
And that just all goes to show, don't believe the media, be the media.
Kissed your hand.
now some real news, this time about May Day. May Day, May the 1st, originally celebrated as Beltane, the arrival of spring, encompassing the ancient festivals of renewal, hope and transformation, celebrated by pagans for thousands of years. Bit of history, during the struggle for the 8-hour working day, things came to a head with an enormous strike across the United States on May the 1st in 1886, after which several of the organisers who were anarchists were executed. Now, this represented a turning point in late 19th century radical politics. Soon after this, and May Day was adopted as the International Workers' Day by the International Labour Congress and has been celebrated as such across the world ever since. May Day has always been the People's Day, but throughout history, religions and governments have repeatedly sought to subvert and usurp the meaning of May Day. Well, this year, press propaganda and mad hysteria around May Day has been mounting as per usual. But this time, it's over in Ireland, where May Day protests are planned around the EU enlargement summit in Dublin. Recent corporate press headlines hitting the streets have shouted that the army, no less, will be drafted in to, quote, put down EU protesters. That's a real quote. All of the media reporting so far about May Day in Dublin has concentrated almost exclusively on violent protesters, while no evidence has been presented of any real risk of violence, and barely a mention has been made of the reasons why people will be protesting. Indeed, several of the articles have sought to link protest groups with terrorist organisations. The media madness will be familiar to those who have followed the sad excuse for journalism rolled out every year for the last 4 years ahead of May Day protests here in London, which has been riddled with factual mistakes, barefaced lies, so-called intelligence from so-called intelligent sources, and quite ridiculous claims. The pattern has intensified in Ireland over the last 2 weeks with a rash of stories which could almost be carbon copies for previous newspaper stories about protests in London. Last weekend, a clutch of disgraceful stories appeared in several newspapers saying that EU protesters had been setting up, quote, arms stashes and weapons stockpiles across Ireland, and that anarchists were, quote, plotting a bloodbath for the streets of Dublin. Now, all this sounds worryingly familiar. Aside from the usual May Day madness, a few years ago there was an infamous article that claimed that the Environmental Direct Action Group, Reclaim the Streets, were, quote, stockpiling weapons, CS gas and stun grenades for use against the police. Of course, this was utter rubbish. More recently, last autumn, the Daily Mail here ran a headline, quote, anarchist thugs plot a bush demo bloodbath. Strange how often this touted bloodbath fails to materialise. Other stories appearing in the Irish mainstream corporate media over the last few days have included the complete misrepresentation of an activist video covering the issues and media hysteria around the EU May Day protests and produced in a blockbuster cynical media spoof style. The newspaper articles have condemned the video as a sinister manifesto for a riot, yet anyone with half a brain cell who watches it will see that it's nothing of the sort. Other examples of crazy creative writing are cropping up almost daily, with other headlines like Prepare for May Day Protest Bloodshed. All of this would be laughable were it not for the fact that this is all written by so-called professional journalists and printed as truth in mainstream newspapers. Indie Media Ireland has commented, "The corporate media is creating the climate for repression. They are trying to drive people away from protests and creating the climate where the police can smash the protests with force."
Events in Dublin framed as Say No to Fortress Europe and May Day No Borders weekend include a week of cultural events, exhibitions, screenings, workshops and much street theatre and visual actions focusing on asylum seekers and refugees, housing, recycling, anti-war and public / private space. There's also a critical mass bicycle protest, a noise protest at the EU ministers' dinner, a No Borders camp and a Reclaim the Streets party. The usual Dublin May Day march by trade unions has this year been cancelled, leading to criticism in order to make way for the official EU enlargement celebrations, which themselves include a large street parade and concerts in the evening. Indie Media Ireland will be reporting all of the events, as well as holding a series of events entitled Another View of Europe, a week of screenings, exhibitions and workshops from the European Independent Media Network, with a major theme being independent media from the countries joining the EU, as well as events at the Sustainable Living Convergence Festival. So far, this year's press coverage from this side of the Irish Sea has focused on the May Day cancelled statement from some members of the London May Day Collective, which says that a large protest in London is not being planned this year and explains some of the reasons for that, citing increasing levels of police repression and calls for a more open discussion of politics and goals. Thus far, coverage of this from the BBC and the Evening Standard has failed to mention May Day in Dublin. In London, plans for the traditional TUC-backed trade union march are going ahead, assembling at Clerkenwell Green at 12 noon and marching to Trafalgar Square, where there will be speakers from Stop the War Coalition, Globalised Resistance and Ken Livingston, if you didn't know, the Mayor of London. In London, plans for the traditional TUC-backed trade union march are going ahead, assembling at Clerkenwell Green at 12 noon. We're just reading that twice there. There are also plans for May Day events in other towns and cities across the UK, including a trade union activist conference in Wales and a programme of events in Lancaster. There are also plans for some pagan May Day events in central London and protests the day before against the organisers of DICEY, Europe's largest arms fair. Elsewhere in Europe, the name Euro May Day is being used for protests in Italy, France, Spain and other countries which are linking trade unions and worker rights issues with other campaigns. In Milan and Barcelona, there will be street reclaiming May Day parades in which they say the joining of environmental and media activism with Labour radicalism for a Bush 3 Europe propagated and subvertised via independent omni-media. Phew. For info on this, check out Indie Media Ireland at www.indiemedia.ie and, of course, the UK site, indiemedia.org.uk. And you're, of course, listening to Indie Media Radio London on 104.4 Resonance FM. Thank you.
Hungary's defence minister has ordered a halt to the construction of a NATAR radar station on a nature reserve after months of protests by environmentalists. Officials said that it was important to balance environmental and security concerns, and an independent inquiry would now be set up to assess the project. The NATO facility near Pécs in southern Hungary has been the target of regular protests by environmental activists, and last Saturday over 200 demonstrators invaded the worksite and managed to halt all construction work. The campaigners say building it would damage precious wildlife and destroy an area of outstanding beauty at the nature reserve, which is 100 miles south of Budapest.
No charges are being brought against the Greenpeace climbers who scaled Big Ben during the recent anti-war protests in London. The brothers climbed Big Ben on the anniversary of the invasion of Iraq and unfurled banners stating "Time for Truth." A Greenpeace spokesperson said, "We are very happy that no charges are being brought against Harry and Simon for their peaceful anti-war protest at Big Ben. They climbed Big Ben to express their strongly held belief that the war against Iraq was wrong and illegal. We would also like to say that criticism of the police over their response to the tower being climbed is, in our view, misplaced. We feel their reaction was responsible and proportionate. There is a well-established tradition of freedom of speech and peaceful protest in the UK. On-site police and security were given full details by Greenpeace officials of who the climbers were and what their intention was as soon as the climb began."
On the 15th of March, Ibai Edera was arrested in a routine traffic check, police check. Ibai is one of eight solidarios who famously cut the cables of the concrete pump at the construction site of the Itoiz Dam, stopping the construction for a year. Ibai now faces 4 years and 10 months in prison for the action. After a 20-year struggle by tens of thousands of people against the dam, and despite the fact that experts believe it is unstable and could endanger the lives of thousands, the dam is currently being filled, and indeed to a higher level than was originally agreed. Those who know the beautiful area will be saddened to hear that the flooding is now extensive, brutal deforestation has taken place, and a road is being built very close to the peaceful village Lakabe. The dam was originally declared illegal by the Supreme Court due to the fact that it would flood several nature reserves, but this was overturned in 2001 by the Constitutional Court, which changed the law specifically to allow for the dam. Since the arrest, there have been several noise demonstrations outside of the prison, and the struggle continues. More information on that, check out the Global Indie Media website, www.indiemedia.org.
Trident Ploughshares have set a deadline for disarmament involving a mass lobby of MPs in the UK, MSPs in Scotland and AMs in Wales, and consuls and embassies around the world. And running from the 12th to the 13th of April, this coincides with the start of the National Trident Ploughshares Conference, where nuclear states will talk and not act on nuclear disarmament.
That's the NPT conference. And for more information on that, you can check out www.tridentploughshares.org. Finally, the state of Mizoram in northern India has declared itself organic and has refused its allocation of chemical fertilizer for this year. Three other Indian states are in the process of going wholly organic. The chief minister of the fifth, Uttarakhand, can't pronounce it, has vowed to keep his state GM-free and pursue organics vigorously. And the Madhya Pradesh government has identified 3,300 villages where only farming done organically will now be practiced. Great news from there. Thank you.
5th saw the anniversary of the shooting of International Solidarity Movement volunteer Brian Avery in Jenin. Brian is one of many thousands of people who have been seriously injured by the Israeli army during the 37-year occupation of Palestine. On April the 5th last year, Brian was shot in the face while standing with another ISMer on an otherwise deserted street in Jenin. He is still undergoing treatment for the horrific injuries that he sustained. On Monday the 5th of April, there was a noise demonstration outside the offices of Rafael, an Israeli arms company, which is a privatized company from the Israeli Defense Force. We have some audio from that, which I'm just going to play for you now.
Arms, the Rafael store producer. Rafael has been implicated in making weapons with depleted uranium, which is an incredibly toxic, volatile substance, and it's suspected that they have used this in refugee camps.
What do you mean in refugee camps? Could you clarify that?
Refugee camps in Palestine. Everybody in Palestine is technically a refugee, whether they live in 48, also known as Israel, or within the West Bank and Gaza, because people were pushed off the land. Oh, nearly a million Palestinians were pushed off their land through violence and torment, rape, an incredibly sophisticated military by Israel, by Zionist forces at that time, who then created the State of Israel, with UN backing in America. And
So what sort of arms do they sell?
Hang on.
Right, so what's happened? Are Rafael not here today?
They're not here. It's like this is what I call the tactic of the popular strike, when people through people pressure come and have enough of a presence or do enough of a protest or even a blockade if necessary of a place, of an offending company, privatizing or murder funding company, and shut it down, having the effect of a strike. You know, you can't get Rafael employees to turn against their bosses in disgust at the cruelty and misery and bloodshed that they're fueling, but you can force them not to come to work by making such a fuss, by making such a protest, and this is what we've managed to do. So we've made them go on strike. We've made a strike against them. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does. Has anything happened here today other than you standing outside?
A friend of ours was arrested. Come and talk about your awful arrest.
Okay, I don't know what to say. They grabbed me and threw me in the van and handcuffed my hands behind my back, and then let me go about 5-10 minutes later.
And why do you think they did that?
I don't know. They were just trying to scare everyone into moving across the other side of the street. As soon as they arrested me, everyone else sort of realised that they could get nicked as well if they stood there.
Were you outside? Were you that side of the
road? We were over that side of the street. They moved us over here so that we'd be annoying the neighbours instead of protesting outside the building we're actually trying to protest against.
Okay, and that was some audio from the protest outside Rafael.
we're almost out of time. Just enough for a few more quick stories.
Last year, London Rising Tide celebrated BP's annual general meeting, AGM, by holding a carnival against oil wars and climate chaos and an alternative AGM outside. Several concerned members of the public also entered the meeting in order to make absolutely sure their concerns hadn't been swamped by the mile-high tide of greenwash that had engulfed the oil festival hall, OFH, for the day. 12 months have now passed, and what have we seen? BP, Shell and all the other oil majors have profited handsomely from a destructive, deceit-ridden war. BP's Baku-KM pipeline is under construction and has become an embarrassment that proves the company's green and socially responsible rhetoric is nothing but top-dollar public relations, and BP boss Lord Brown's salary soared to just under the £5 million mark, just as his company's North Sea and other oil workers saw their personal safety, union rights and wages increases in tatters. BP's AGM falls this year on Thursday, April the 15th, again at the Royal Festival Hall on London's South Bank. London Rising Tide will be taking action as well against BP. For more information, see www.risingtide.org.uk.
And 2 days before that, a quick announcement. Indie Media Cinema is presenting an M11 film, Life in the Fast Lane, which is an inspiring, moving and at times pretty funny full-length documentary about the inside story of the No M11 campaign and the fight against the Criminal Justice Act back in 1994. That's next week, Tuesday the 13th of April. It's free. The film starts at about 8 o'clock and that's in the upstairs bar at the Brixton Ritzy, Cold Harbour Lane.
And an exhibition of stencil graffiti art from the streets of Iraq and Palestine. Arrowfish is a stencil graffiti artist who recently spent 3 months travelling through Iraq and Palestine, painting on the bullet kind of pocked walls and annoying security forces. The resulting artworks and writing are on display at the Foundry, Great Eastern Street, EC1. The nearest tube is Old Street, and that will be on display until Sunday, the 18th of April.
And we're just having a little trouble with the 10-minute outro piece that was going to be played. So time for a quick few more stories. Sainsbury's supermarket in Brislington was the target of a national Greenpeace action last week, who are still protesting at the use of GM animal feed in producing milk. Several activists, helped by a friendly herd of cows and a giant milk bottle, explained how the Sainsbury's promise had been broken, their promise to eliminate GM from its products. The supermarket's continued support for biotech, together with its shrinking market share, is likely to continue to make it particularly vulnerable to activist and consumer pressure in the future.
Over 200 people gathered from noon on Sunday, the 4th of April, outside Belmarsh Prison in southeast London to protest against the indefinite internment of 14 people and to demand the repeal of UK's anti-terrorism laws. A wide range of people were present, from Muslim leaders to Sambatistas, from Green Party activists, including the Deputy Mayor of London and a London MEP, to Turkish communists, from lawyers to anti-racist campaigners. Besides a number of speeches, there was also samba, theatre and an MC doing poetry. The detainees have been held at Belmarsh Prison without charge or trial for over 2 years, and many are losing hope and their minds. After 2 minutes silence in solidarity with the detainees, as much noise as possible was made by those present so that those inside could hear they had not been forgotten by the outside world. The website of the Campaign Against Criminalising Communities has much more information on this event, so please go to www.cacc.org.uk. And now we're going to our intro.
And just before we do that, just time to say, if you want to get in touch with the show, you can mail to irlnewswire@ziplip.com, and we'll see you next week.
Bye-bye. 212. Yes. This is Michael Frontier from Spearhead, and you're listening to Indie Media's London Radio, connecting London with the rest of the planet. Stand firm, stay human, hold the vibes, and give the corporation some complications.
centre of the German capital Berlin was a sea of banners and flags today, as more than a quarter of a million people turned out on the streets as part of a day of action called by Europe's labour organisations. The German trade unions mobilised for a mass march in support of social security provision and workers' rights, and therefore against the Social Democratic Green Coalition government led by Chancellor Gerhard Schröder.
Ich selber bin Mitglied der IG Metall.
This steelworker from Eisenhüttenstadt on the German-Polish border and a member of the Engineers' Union told us that cuts are happening everywhere, in pensions or in welfare benefits, which were achieved through worker struggle. The rich are getting richer, the poor are getting poorer. I've still got a job, but not for much longer. All the employees have got a redundancy notice because our workplace has gone bankrupt. Because the welfare state won't be a welfare state in 5 years' time. It can't remain the case that the wages you get aren't enough to live off. We got up early this morning in order to try and change things, said this building worker from Thuringia. Things have to change in Europe. The workers in a weakened society throughout Europe have to take to the streets. What is democracy? Rule by the people. But which people rule over the people? We're against the things the government is doing, for example increases in university tuition fees or cuts in women's refuges or schools which have to suffer because they don't have any money. Anger is so widespread in Germany. There were also mass demonstrations in Cologne and Stuttgart as this boss's offensive is being carried out by a government led by the Social Democrats, who founded the working class movement here and still have strong links with the unions. But for how much longer? Functionaries from the Engineers IG Metall Union and the United Services Union, Verdi, are openly discussing splitting from the Social Democrats and launching a new left-of-centre party. But Trade Union Confederation leader Michael Sommer says it's not about forming a new party, but changing the course of government policy, which here has the innocent-sounding name Agenda 2010. So why were the union leadership silent while the bills were passed, which, for example, will slash unemployment benefit, or bills which introduced a charge of €10 to go to the doctors? If Sommer's speech at the closing rally in Berlin is to be believed, the days of the unions passively sitting back are over.
Der Schulterschluss zwischen Gewerkschaftern und Studenten.
This closing of ranks between unions and students, welfare rights groups and pensioners, between the unemployed and the apprentices, from left-wingers in the parties to church groups, the peace movement and globalisation critics. Also in Germany we have created this new alliance, an alliance of solidarity, and this alliance will remain. But whether out of this fighting talk a movement can be built that can stop the destruction of social services remains to be seen. Matthew Heaney, reporting from Berlin in Germany.
O San Precario, protettore di noi, precari dalla terra, dacci oggi la maternità pagata, proteggi i dipendenti delle catene commerciali, gli angeli dei call center, le partite IVA e i collaboratori appesi a un filo, dona loro ferie e contributi pensionistici, reddito e servizi gratuiti e salvali dai lugubri licenziamenti. San Precario, che ci proteggi dal basso nella rete, prega per noi, interinali e cognitari. Porgi presso Pietro, Giacomo, Paolo e i santi tutti la nostra umile supplica. Ricordati delle anime in scadenza di contratto, torturate dalle divinità pagane, libero mercato e flessibilità, che si aggirano incerte, senza futuro né casa, senza pensioni né dignità. Illumina di speranza i lavoratori in nero, dona loro gioia e gloria per tutti i secoli dei secoli. Mayday, Mayday.
Thank you. John Henry Clark used to say that the relationship between history and a people is the same as that of a mother to her child. His statement is no less true today of the relationship between mass media and society. Our world has never been more dependent on forms of mass media for an understanding of who we are or how others see us. Malcolm X's warning of an era of image making has now entered a hyperphase where the function of image plays an increasingly more powerful role in support of continued political and economic exploitation. Consider as a recent example the decision this week of Congress to pass a bill supporting increased penalties, including 3-year prison sentences, against internet file sharers who engage in the free exchange of cultural expression. Though reported in the Washington Post, little was done to accurately describe the behind-the-scenes lobbying that took place or the importance of controlling popular culture as a function of global rule. The entertainment industry claims that it is protecting intellectual property rights and copyright, but another view, expanding the context of this decision, suggests something else. Control over the expression of those selected for oppression is as old as humanity itself. Who controls the forms of mass media has always been part of the scheme of rulers. Consider the words of Zbigniew Brzezinski, former national security advisor and consultant to power, who once spoke of the necessity of keeping separate the anti-imperial movements in Africa and those taking place here in the United States. In 1997, Brzezinski wrote about the role cultural imperialism has played in the rise of the West and the current role it plays in the dominance of the United States over the rest of the world. He likened American dominance over global communications, popular entertainment, and mass culture to that of the military in maintaining universal hegemony. It is in this context that this week's decision to imprison music sharers must be seen. It relates directly to the ability of those whose goal it is to rule to control the culture and image of what is to be popular. This need transcends party politics as its value is too important to be squabbled over, certainly not publicly, by Democrats and Republicans. They know the power of cultural expression and the need to control it. So when entertainment companies stepped up, Senators Orrin Hatch, Republican from Utah, and Patrick Leahy, Democrat from Vermont, gladly accepted contributions of $178,000 and $152,000 respectively, and did what well-paid subjects to power do, what they are told. Stay out of the way of empire and make easy the manipulation of the conquered. For Africa Meets Africa, Free Mix Radio, and VoxUnion.com, that's V as in voice, O X as in Malcolm, Union.com, this has been Jared Ball, a.k.a. Turned Tables, the Funkinist Journalist. CIA, ATF, KKK, IRS, TNT, CBS, NBC, FBI, CIA, ATF, KKK, IRS, TNT, CBS, NBC.
Great love and a great understanding, and that we try to extend this to the general black population and also people, oppressed people all over the world. And I think that we differ from some other groups simply because we understand the system better than most groups understand the system. And with this realization, we attempt to form a strong political base based in the community with the only strength that we have, and that's the strength of a potentially destructive force if we don't get freedom.
Going to Dublin for May Day? Direct actions, events and parties. From 15 to 25, the leaders of the new EU meet on 1st of May, International Workers' Day, to celebrate the integration of 10 new member states. Dublin 2004 for Alternative Europe. People like you all over Europe are fighting for the same thing. Friday, Crystal Mass, a walk and cycle tour of Dublin.
Saturday the 1st, May Day.
The resistance against the banquet of the bosses of Europe. Bring the noise. Sunday, no borders, solidarity with the migrants. And Monday, reclaim the streets, a free street party. See indymedia.ie. Dublin, May Day.
Dublin, May Day.
2004, against the Europe capital. Corporate media, propaganda machine in overdrive with predictable use of fear as pre-justification for violence. The European Union means an increase in state terrorism, social control, and capitalist exploitation. It cannot be reformed. It must be destroyed from the bottom up. The policies and decisions over our future in Europe have been made already by bureaucrats and committee meetings. In Ireland, the EU was hailed as the bearer of prosperity that would help free the country from its post-colonial exclusion. Now the bubble has burst, the Celtic tiger growls no more. The EU means an integration of states to achieve a greater control of our movements. The Fortress Europe. The death toll rises of undesirable killed while trying to enter our Fortress Europe. A new European army will mean only one thing, more wars and more power struggles over the world's resources. For the capitalists, the EU is the agent of neoliberal globalisation.
Dublin, Mayday 2004.
For information, see dublinmayday.org, wombles.org.uk or indymedia.ie. Direct action events and parties. Resistance is fertile. Mayday 2004. For weekend of resistance. No justice, no peace. No to a fortress Europe. Be the democracy you want to see.
You've been listening to Indie Media Radio London on Resonance 104.4.